accession number 20281, reel 1.
Harry Wicks, reel 1. Where were you born, please?
Chelsea.
Which year was this?
29th of the 6th, 25th.
And did you grow up and have your schooling in Chelsea?
Yes. In a Marlborough school, in Marlborough Road.
How old were you when you left there?
14.
So was that just as war was breaking out?
Yeah, 1938, 1939, that way.
Did you hear Neville Chamberlain declare war on Germany?
Yes.
Can you describe under what circumstances, please?
Well, I remember the wireless set we had then, funny old thing, a valve set, you know. And I think all the family were there, and I think we was a bit disappointed, really, you know.
Had you expected that we might be able to avoid war?
No. I personally thought, but then again, I suppose, given my age, that we should have done something before that.
So why were you disappointed?
Well, there was lots of things we went through, weren't there? There was Abyssinia, there was Spain, you know, the revolution in Spain. There was Abyssinia, the Italians in Abyssinia, and then later on, Hitler marched into Austria, Czechoslovakia, and that, you know, and you could see what was going to happen, like, you know, even at the age of about 15 or 16.
And so you were in favour of the war declaration?
Well, I thought we had to do something about it, you know.
Did the war affect you at first?
No, not at all. Not at all. I was, I suppose at that age, it doesn't really affect you, you know.
So, when did it first start to affect you?
Well, I joined the Home Guard when I was about 15 and a half. Sorry. And we were stationed around Chelsea. And went through most of the bombing and that, you know, that's when it started to affect us. I lived actually in Guinness Buildings in Chelsea. That got bombed. The power station was at the back, Lotts Road Power Station. That was always trying to get bombed, you know.
What kind of experiences did you have with the Chelsea Home Guard?
Well, we used to do manoeuvres and things like that. Just building ourselves up, you know.
Did you get much training with them?
Yes, quite a lot. I was really enthusiastic about it, you know, in them days.
What kind of training was it?
Field craft, sniping, all sorts of different guns, the old-fashioned guns like the Piat mortar and the Thompson and the Browning automatic rifle, the BAR they call it, you know. Right. Old Lewis guns.
What advice did they give you about being a sniper?
Not really. If you was a good shot, a marksman. We went to Bisley and I passed my marksman's course there, you know. And just carried on from there, basically.
Did your particular part of Chelsea get badly bombed?
Yes, very much. There was they dropped a landmine round the back of Lotts Roadway. There was St Mark's College was badly bombed. The depositories right opposite the buildings where I lived, that was bombed. Yeah, very, very, very bad, actually.
Were your buildings hit?
They wasn't it then. They was it later when I was in the Marines. I got compassionate leave. I was engaged to a girl who lived in the buildings. I got compassionate leave then, you know. Guinness Trust Buildings in King's Road. And the whole block, funny enough, where we used to live, we'd moved out by then and moved into Fulham Road, opposite the Chelsea football ground, actually. And the whole block where we lived had actually bombed. I lost quite a lot of friends there, you know.
Did your girlfriend survive?
Yes, she was at the other end of the same block, but the other end of the block. And she had some leg wounds and that, and they came and lived in our house in Fuller Road, you know, at the time.
Was your own experience of the bombing frightening?
I don't really want to sound macho or brave or anything like that, but it never really affected me at all. The honest truth never bothered me at all. Why, I don't know. Because later on, in the Normandy lands, that I did feel fear, like, you know.
We'll come on to that later. Did you use shelters?
Never. Not once.
So, what did you do when a siren went?
Well, I was always basically with the home guard and that, like, you know. We used to go down, and if there was any bombing, we used to go and try and do the work we could do, you know, helping people out and that, you know.
How do you think public morale stood up to the bombing when you were there?
I thought they were fantastic. I thought there was an SPD corps in them days that I may be wrong, we don't seem to get now, but it was, I think everybody was on the same sort of level, you know.
Was there any hatred of the German air crews who were carrying out the bombing?
No, I don't think so. No, I don't think so in them days. I don't think they liked them for it, things like that, but it was war.
And what happened to you next after this?
Well, I volunteered. I came out the army, and all my mates were older than me, like, you know, and they was all getting called up and going in the Navy and the other. And anyway, I volunteered for the Marines. I was just 17 at the time. And I went to Ornane Acton. And I always wanted to get in the Marines, actually. And I volunteered for the Marines in just before Christmas in 42. And I was called up in February, 43.
What happened then?
Well, we met at we were called up. We met at I think it was Waterloo. No, Victoria Station, and we went to Eastleigh Barracks at Portsmouth. As young Marines, and the whole squad were all youngsters, all teenagers.
Was that for basic training?
Yes, yes, yes.
What was basic training like at Eastleigh?
Very tough. They never let you out till you could walk properly, believe it or not. You had to march along, right, you know, very hard.
What do you mean, walk properly?
To march like a Marine.
How does a Marine march? Is it just the same as a soldier?
Yeah, well, that's it. To march like a soldier, then. They're not...
How did the instructors treat the recruits?
Very good. Very good. They regarded us as a necessary evil, I think.
Were you able to do the things they wanted you to do?
Yes, yes. I was a blacksmith striker, you know. Not horses and shoes. Car axle springs and that, which you don't have now, but you used to have transverse springs. So I was very fit, like, you know, strong for the age, like, you know.
Were there some of the recruits who had to be rejected?
No, not then. We went right through our basic training at Eastleigh, just to sort of knock the rough edges off you. And then from there we went to... over onto Gosport, to a place called Fort Gomer, one of the old sea forts that surrounds Portsmouth. There's quite a lot of them around there, at Stonehouse, and done some more field training there.
What did field training involve?
Echelon and camouflage and cover from fire, cover from view, Bren gun, 2-inch mortar. And in them days, of course, the old anti-tank rifle, which was not good really, you know, but it was a massive thing, fired a 5-inch bullet.
Why wasn't it very good?
Well, it'd probably be good against a tank like the Bren gun carrier, that, but not against German tanks. They just bounced off. Well, our shells bounced off of them in the end, you know, the Tiger and the Panzer.
What happened next?
We went to Dordich, 22nd Training Battalion.
To where?
Dordich, in Devon. That was the... That was like the holding camp. And I volunteered for hazardous service there.
Why did you do that?
Well, I thought there was... It seemed to me that we was not sort of getting anywhere, you know. And probably being a little bit crazy too, you know. I was always a fairly good swimmer. And it was... Well, actually, it turned out to be the Cockleshell Heroes, that lot, you know, swimming and canoeing and things like that. But when they found out my age, they threw me out. And actually, in actual fact, I'd come top of the thing. I've got the medal in there, the best all-round recruit medal. But you had to be over a certain age to go into any action at all, you know.
Do you remember Bill Sparks or Blondie Hasler?
Yes, yeah. Well, I remember him for a reason that they shouldn't be with Bill, because Bill sold his medal, didn't he? You know, see, when we go to the museum, you go up in the medal thing, you know, I mean, who's to say I don't know if I should even say this, he's financial. Do we know what a chap's financial thing is? And he was offered 10,000 for it from the new museum. And he knew he could get more for that because it was a one-off thing. His medal was a one-off. There was 18 given out of mine, D-Day, but his was, the Cockatoo's was a one-off thing, you know. So his was worth about 32,000. And good luck to him. I've seen him at Linston a couple of times.
But did you know Bill Sparks and Blondie Hasler?
No, not personally. No, not at all. Not at all. They were before my time, basically, you know.
What do you mean when they found out about your age? What age should you have been?
Well, you wasn't supposed to be in any action until you was over 18.
So what happened next?
Well, from there, we went into went to Southend, that's right, Cliftonville. And they started putting us all into landing craft flotillas. You know, LCAs, LCMs, LCPVs. We ended up in a 653 LCM flotilla. 8 boats, 4 on each watch, more or less, you know. And... we went to, the first place we went to was Aylin Island, in the creek there, we was, you know. And it was from there that we left for France, like, you know.
What does LCM stand for?
Landing Craft Mechanical. It's, they can carry, well, carry, they carry one tank, not a heavy tank, they could carry a Bren carrier, or a van, or a jeep, or something like that. There's the LCTs carry the actual tanks. And then, of course, you've got the LCSs, the landing craft ship. There was a Galaxy, the landing craft rocket, Landing Craft Gun, Landing Craft Flak, LCR, LCG, LCF, all the lot, LCPs, LCAs, Landing Craft Assault, and we trained in all of them, you know. Oh yes, before we went there, we went to Dartmouth in the college there. We done some action around there. I don't know if you know about this, Mr. Wood, that it's around the corner, Sipton Sands, where the Americans lost all their men. You remember that landing where the E-boats got in amongst our... And we was actually at Dartmouth at the time.
Do you remember anything about the attack on the Americans?
No, I have visited there. So I've been there and seen the plaques and that, you know, because I go to Limpston about twice a year to the commando training place.
What type of jobs did you learn to do in the LCMs?
Well, I was a deckhand and gunner. But the gun was nothing. It was an old Strip Lewis, you know. It was nothing really. It wasn't. I regarded it as a. I thought we were just like chauffeurs, you know. I volunteered three times for the commandos. But Captain Fletcher, who incidentally won the DSO, kept saying that we'd got a job to do, and it seemed to me that it seemed like a waste of time, actually, you know. I joined the Marines in them days to see some action, like, you know, and it seemed to me that we were just like a bargee, like boats, you know. We went to HMS Wolverston in just out Felixstowe, Harwich, in the river. Is it River Orwell? Orwell?
I think so.
A pin mill. And we had our boats there. And then we sailed right round to Aylin. And then, like, we got the word, basically, that something was going to happen. And... we went to Normandy from Aylin. We had the eight boats went over, and the reserve crews went over on a ship called the Cape Terrain. And we took Bren gun carriers full of explosives with assault engineers on them. That was our job. And we landed in Sword Beach, opposite a little place called Wistram, just left of the Orne Canal. So basically our left flank was open all the time because we was the last end of the beach, if you see my meaning. Farther up, like, was Juneau, Omaha, Utah, and the big Mulberry and Harbour was at... Lyon-sur-Mer, you know, Arromanches, that way. But where we was quite a little pocket.
What was your crossing like?
Uneventful, but marvellous, like Piccadilly Circus. Everything was there, everything you can imagine. You couldn't even dream of. There was every ship that was towing a barrage balloon. LCAs, and it was pretty rough though, and as you know, they're flat bottomed, so a lot of the guys were sick. The LCPs and the LCAs were being battered because, you probably know this, they called it off twice because of the weather. And we got there very early in the morning. I mean, I have to think about this. It's about nearly 60 years ago now. And as I say, we went round the senior officer landing, and he said, like, more or less, go where you like. And we went into, we dropped out my crew was a man named Crafe, and he was very tall, 6'3", called him Lofty, a chap named Harry Gilbert. Our coxswain was a guy named Ellis, who incidentally got the same decoration as me. And we were deckhands. And our stoker, Jerry Wright was about 30, and he must have thought, what am I doing with these kids, like, you know, because we regarded him as a father figure. And we went into Beach alongside an LCT. The LCPs were going in. The commandos were running up the beach. There was absolutely chaos, it looked like to me, but obviously someone had thought it all out. But we dropped our ramp, and our Bren gun carrier got 20 yards up the beach and blew up straight away. My friend Birdie was standing on the ramp of a boat on the right. He got shot. A sniper got him. He got shot straight away. And then a bomb blew the ramp off. There was, fortunately, hardly any German air power there. Our Air Force was fantastic. We had so much cover. It wasn't true. There was the Lord Roberts, the monitor, and the Effuser, with two 15-inch guns on the front, going in because they were very shallow draft. And they were probably shelling calm with 15-inch guns, you know. There was I remember a lighthouse just left of the Orne Canal sniping, and a destroyer went in and blew the top of that off. And it was absolutely, I suppose it was organised chaos, you know. There were people floating about in the water, life belts, you know, May West's, Elbits.
But you say a bomb hit your ramp?
No, a bomb hit the ramp of the next craft, us, one of our craft to us, and blew the ramp off. Our ramp was down. We came off the beach alongside this LCT, and he said he was it was a young lieutenant there. He said he was stuck, and he said, can we give you a tow? Everybody was helping everybody else out, you know, trying to pick people up, people floating about, you know. He said, no, me props have fouled up. And as I say, I was a swimmer. And I said, well, I'll try it. Because the back of the LCA was in about 6 to 7 foot of water. So I got in, and I was getting the rope off the prop. And, you know, the prop like that. It's gone now, the scar. It cut me off. And we got it off. He said there was an object on the end of it, and we thought it was a mine. It might have been a dummy, like, you know. They pulled me back on the boat, and he said, we give us a tow, and we towed him off then. And that was an LCT, so those LCMs are very strong. They're two grey marine diesels on them, you know. They're not fast, but they're very powerful.
So there was supposed to be a mine at on the end of the rope.
Yeah, a telemine. I didn't really see what a telemine was like. It was, there was so much chaos. My only thing was to get the line off the prop, like, you know. I stripped off to go down in there, and the officer asked me name and that, and I think that was it. We came off of there. We went back to the ship. I don't think, I've got an idea that we loaded with water in jerry cans. We came in again, and a LCP with about 20 or something men on board, I don't know how many they carry, but they're only wood. There's no armour on them, you know. And a shell dropped right beside of it. We pulled up alongside there, came alongside and tied up to our bollards, and then Lofty and myself and Harry, we were getting the wounded out and put them in. Another LCP come alongside him, and we were putting them into him. And then, of course, another shell dropped, and of course old Joe Wright, the old stoker, he was up and about, and he had his arm almost severed, you know. Lofty Craven had a piece in the stomach, and Harry got a piece in the neck. And I got a piece in this arm, back, and leg. But I was the least. Mine was only superficial, you know. And we went back to the Cape Terrain, and they took us up. We lowered some sorry, I put a funny enough, I put a you know the old pull through in the rifle. I put a pull through round Harry's arm to stop the bleeding as a tourniquet. And the only one who wasn't hurt was Stretford, but he'd done all the business, our coxswain. He took us alongside the boat, he took us alongside it, because we was under fire all the time, you know. And we was, where this shell had dropped, they give you, I don't know if you know, Conrad, they give you big wooden pegs and you knock them in the holes, like, you know.
What do you mean?
Well, if the shrapnel tears holes in your boat, you knock these pegs, so we've got about 50 pegs in the hole and the water's coming in. We got back to the Cape Terrain. They lowered a stretcher and we got Lofty in it, because Lofty was bad. He'd got it right through the stomach. And as I say, I was nothing wrong with me. I've had worse working, you know, blacksmithing. But having got in there, they stitched me up and packed me full of penicillin, and I found out I was allergic to penicillin. So I was worse. They put us on board an MTB that had its rudder shot off, and he was steering with his propellers, his two propellers, and with all the wind, I was standing up, but all the wind were laying on deck, and we made our way back to England. He dropped us off at Aylin Island. We never went back. I had about a week's leave, because my father was an ambulance driver. He drove all through the war, all through the Blitz, you know. And he was looking at me back. He said, "I said no, there's really nothing wrong with it." And he took the stitches out, actually, my dad. And we went back to, I think we went to Southampton. And the next time we went back to France in a landing craft dock. Now I don't know if you know this, they lower the door and you sail your boats in to this. Then they raise the door and pump it dry, so your boats are laying on the deck. So when you get to your objective, they lower the gate again, fill the boat up, and you just sail off, which is like a luxury, really. Well, when we got there this time, we went back to Arromanches, where the big harbour was, the big Mulberry Harbour, because our harbour was finished by then, you know, at Sword Beach. And we all had special jobs to do, and our job was, there's two boats, two swimmers. We had a big transformer put on the boat, and a drum. If you remember in the old days when they used to do, before this technology, when they used to do the cables, they used to have a great big drum and pull it. Well, this was, but it was all rubber, this, with a wire running through it. Also a hammer-like device, which we had to lower into the water. Our job was to swim. We went to Le Havre Harbour to the docks and the basins and put the cable all around the basins, and we had I would think they would be called artificers, electricians in the Navy, and they would switch on these generators with the big batteries and dynamos, and we'd also lower this drum thing, and we were looking for acoustic mines and magnetic mines. That was the job we did. We'd all through so that they could use the harbour, because they hadn't got a big port yet. What made us weary is as we went through on the mole in Le Havre, there was three sea mines all strapped together at about 50 yards paces, you know, which the Germans had prepared to blow the whole harbour up. And of course, they never done it. The E-boat pens had been almost smashed, and there was about 15 foot of concrete.